Thank you. Much members for once more calling me an opportunity to chair this session. Let me welcome you from your weekend break, but also a special word of welcome to our team from Treasury, led by Mr. Ishmael Momonyat, not commonly known as Momo. And I can see here your team will also, the presentation will also be conducted by Mr. Haberman. A special word of welcome also to our media entourage and other stakeholders present here. Members, this is a continuation of the business that we started last week, that is the deliberation on the three bills that are currently in front of our committee, the credit rating bills, the revenue loss bill, as well as the financial markets bill. But for today's session, we'll be focusing on two bills, that is the credit rating bills, which will then be followed, of course, by the revenue loss bill. So without any further ado, I'm going to allow national congress today, after listening to presentation from various stakeholders and the submissions, of course, from various stakeholders, today we are going to get the feedback or a response from Treasury on concerns raised or issues raised by those stakeholders through their submissions. Now, I hope members still remember on what are the key concerns and the comments that were made by various stakeholders during the public hearings, but also those that were given in a written form to members as submitted by various stakeholders. So let's make sure that as National Treasury give their response to this matter, all the issues as raised are catered for. So as tomorrow, as we deliberate as a committee, we are able then to come to a determination as to whether those issues were succinctly responded to and whether is it important for us then to take this process forward and to present it to the National Assembly. So without any further ado, Momo and your team, could you please take us through on to your responses? Thank you.
Thank you, Chair, and may I just add that thank you for inviting us, and also just point out that the Financial Services Board is also here, led by Mr. Bert Chinetsa, the Deputy Legislator of Securities. Chair, I think, you know, we received 7 written submissions from CISA, some of the ratings agencies themselves, all of which Standard & Poor's and Moody's, as well as other submissions from Invest, Ellen Gray, and so on. There were 7 in total. And can I say, you know, just to firstly thank them for their comments, because certainly, I think as Treasury, we welcome these comments and we take them very seriously. They certainly help to identify often inadvertent errors, or sometimes even errors that we clearly didn't see, or kind of perhaps didn't look at the full implications of the wording. And I think by and large, we've been able to take them into account. And obviously what we're going to do now is just to go through the main issues. I think that the issues, the way we understood it, related to 5 major areas: on the scope and application, on the request for plain language, on the issue of liability, which is quite an important area, on the issue of endorsement, and on offenses. And what we're going to do is just, therefore, we've labeled this, and in the presentation, we'll just go through each of these areas for the committee. We have got, aside from the presentation, a much more detailed document drawn up, which is just a response document. I should add that we did previously take responses into account and, in fact, put that up on our website as well when this was first published by the department before we came to Parliament. And even though, I mean, we had hoped we had taken most things into account, I think given the nature of legislation, you never do. So I think let us then just go through some of these issues. I'll ask Roy just to maybe just go through the issues. But I think just to make the point, if we were to pass this legislation, we'll be the first country in Africa to pass the equivalence requirements that's required by the EU. And, you know, we're aware of, I think, and it's quite important that we recognize the global nature of credit ratings, that these are multinational institutions. They don't do all their work here. The major ones have to be of a global nature, because if you want foreign investors, they need to be able to know that whatever rating they put on, say, a company or debt here is equivalent to what they would do in another country. So this has certainly been strongly recognized in the bill. We've also, as we said, taken into account all the new developments, be it in the EU and other countries, with regard to regulating credit rating agencies. There are lots of complexities, and I think we remain at all times, I think, just concerned that to the extent that there are unintended consequences, that hopefully we've tried to minimize that by picking up as many as possible. Because by and large, the message is we want to promote investment, we want to protect investors, we want the ratings process to be credible, we want to make sure there's integrity in the process. And this does lay the basis, I think, for creating South Africa as a financial services hub for the entire continent. So I think just bearing that in mind, let's just go through, Roy, the specific issues that were raised. And as I said, it is out here in more detail. And I should add that what we've tried to do, Chair, is also give you a copy with track changes of the changes that we envisage as a result, just to make it easier so you can see exactly where we're going and what proposed changes we intend to make.
Thank you very much, Mona and Chair. I think in the process of drawing up the bill, both the second round of comments and in this round of comments, we had two big groups of comments. One group that said the bill was too strict on ratings agencies, and another group that said the bill was too lenient, which we hope suggests that Treasury has struck a middle ground in what is quite a contentious area of legislation. Some of the commentators about the bill being too strict noted the complexity of regulating multinational agencies. There was questions from members, very interesting questions on the ability for us to even regulate opinion or free speech. Issues about the small number of analysts in ratings agencies companies in South Africa, and that using Johannesburg as a base to expand to Africa, and obviously the potential for ratings agencies to exit South Africa if the regulation is too onerous. Some people said the bill is too lenient. There was one particular set of comments saying that the exemption provisions allowed us to exempt too many people and were too wide-ranging. There was one comment, I'm just summarizing the comments, there's quite a detailed in section 3 of the document that we've circulated, all the comments are laid out there. I'm just highlighting the big ones. Obviously, there's need to allow for the removal of the agencies. Some people wanted stronger liability provisions, and some people wanted stronger provisions on key personnel. In the bill, we allow for something called fit and proper, which is quite a standard approach in financial services legislation, but there were suggestions that because credit rating agencies are very important, we needed stricter requirements. There's a very high-level overview of the sort of scope of the comments that we received. I think we need to take a step back and just remind us about the rationale for introducing the bill. Firstly, it's very important to protect investors. South African investors need to be certain that the ratings they are using are undertaken in an appropriate way. So there is quite a lot of reliance, both informally and formally in the system, on ratings. I think that comment was made very nicely in the CISA presentation last week, highlighting that particularly for small investment houses and for smaller pension funds and for pension fund trustees, they rely on credit ratings quite extensively. And it's not always clear that they should be relying on them, but they don't have their own in-house research teams. So they do rely on the opinions that they get from credit rating agencies. Then we also need to protect the system from unscrupulous agencies. There's no real good framework for what is a good agency. In actual fact, municipal bonds can be rated by anybody. All you have to do is apply for to be a ratings agency for municipal bonds. There's no requirement that says that this agency that is providing a rating on a municipal bond needs to be a registered rating agency, because obviously we don't have a framework for regulating credit rating agencies. And then MoMA has highlighted the strict equivalence requirements from the European Union. And essentially, credit rating agencies must operate in a jurisdiction with an equivalent or higher standard of regulation by no later than 30 April 2012. So we're just 1 or 2 months behind schedule, but we are on track. And then Argentina, Australia, Brazil, Canada, and those other countries have met these requirements. And we should meet these requirements as soon as the bill is passed. And then there are quite a lot of philosophical questions which are interesting and caused me a lot of thinking. This issue about regulating an opinion. And we do take the point that agencies can only express an opinion based on the data at their disposal. And they can't be held liable if the data that they receive in good faith is inappropriate. They cannot also be held responsible for how investors use an opinion. And we actually got independent legal advice on this. And in the response document, we go into quite a lot of detail under what circumstances liability, and I'll talk about that a bit later, under what conditions common law liability would apply. And I think that the approach that we're taking with liability does ensure that they can't be held responsible for investors that overly rely on opinions. Then obviously an opinion is free speech, and we cannot really regulate that. The general approach is that the opinion itself is not regulated, but rather the process of how that opinion is derived. The methodology used should be reasonable. They should bona fide their intentions, and that's also one of the principles of common law that is included, and that we should try and get around conflicts of interest. It's all very good and well having a credit rating agency, but if they only have one client and they rely completely on that client, then you can expect them to potentially put out a rating that is inappropriate. And then there's a very interesting case which is in the response document, and a very interesting set of legal opinions where an investor took, actually I think it was Moody's Investment Services, to court. And another set of cases where the ratings agencies said that ratings agency is an infringement of free speech, and there's quite a lot of literature and papers that have been written on this in the United States. And generally they find that actually it's not an infringement of free speech, and that's because the ability for a commercial entity to express its opinion can be regulated. And it's quite different from an individual expressing their freedom of speech. So I think that we are quite happy that if passes the United States freedom of speech requirements, then I think it should be appropriate for us to. Then to get to specific questions, obviously there was a lot of concern about plain language, a number of concerns about onerous plain language requirements, and I actually think one of the members read out the section of the Act dealing with this, and we completely concur that I think there was too much shouting about the plain language requirements. Essentially all we're saying is that it is in plain language if a person of the class of persons for whom the credit rating policy code document or information is intended, with average literary skills and experience in dealing with credit ratings, then for the purposes of this bill, it is in plain language. And that's quite important because you do actually want to create a system where ratings agencies are encouraged to issue ratings that ordinary people in the market that use these ratings can use them. I think we've all seen examples of investment analyses where they use very complex language. Sometimes they don't even use full words, and they use half words and abbreviations. And that's almost completely ununderstandable to the average person using these ratings. So we think it's quite important that we do have a plain language requirement, and we do submit to the committee that we don't need to change the requirement in the bill. Then I've spoken about liability, and there's an extensive section in the response document on this, both in the section 3 where we go through all the comments, and then a discussion in the main part of the document on the approach taken in South Africa. There was concern expressed that the liability provisions could threaten the viability of credit rating agencies, that the liability regime is potentially higher than existing provisions, and this idea of reliance on third-party data. In response, we did quite a lot of work on understanding the liability provisions. We got external advice in the last round from the University of Witwatersrand Commercial Law Department, and we also received a formal legal opinion from Barnum Gilfillan, and we also reviewed international liability provisions. The European Union has brought out a proposal very similar to ours, actually it's almost passed, saying that civil liability is the standard in the European Union, provided that the rating agency meets the provisions of the bill, of their ratings or regulations. Pretty much similar to the process we've taken. United States, there's quite a lot of work that has been taken to remove credit ratings from a lot of exemptions, particularly in their Exchanges Act and in their Securities Act, where credit rating agencies were actually exempt from a lot of requirements. That has been taken out by Dodd-Frank. So we are really following what is happening in the European Union and the United States. And as we said last, in 2 weeks ago, it is our considered opinion that the current liability provisions, all that they do is entrench common law. There is substantial case law and interpretation of common law liability. We would prefer courts to rely on principles and precedent rather than to rely on a statute, and we want to ensure that credit rating agencies cannot contract out of their common law liability. So we submit to the committee that there should be no changes made to Section 19. The next area of substantial number of comments was Section 18, which deals with the endorsement of ratings and the role of credit ratings in South Africa. There were a substantial number of comments on the proposed endorsement regime and a substantial amount of lobbying to the Treasury and et cetera, and there was a view expressed by at least one agency that this may prove to be a disincentive for agencies to operate in South Africa. And this is particularly if you read Section 18 together with Section 19, where it creates liability for South African credit rating agencies. And this is a liability with regards to ratings on non-South African instruments or entities. Many comments, particularly around the potential for double regulation, substantial additional regulatory burden on credit rating agencies, and the potential for a burden for the regulator, because the regulator would have to check that in every time that endorsement takes place, that all the conditions of the what will then be the Act are met. I think we need to rethink, and we do take the point that this is quite an onerous requirement, and so we have actually proposed a small change, but it is actually quite an important change. And that's just to quickly go through the diagram that I presented 2 weeks ago. A typical credit rating agency would be headquartered in the United States. It might do the ratings of banks in one jurisdiction like Cyprus, and it might do the ratings of insurance companies in another jurisdiction like South Africa. This ratings agency would then issue opinions on South African banks and their instruments. What I'm trying to say is that actually it might be possible, it certainly happens at least one of the firms, that the analysts that do the ratings on South African banks are not based in South Africa. And that's quite important to understand how these guys operate internationally. So in actual fact, they're completely outside the regulatory net when it comes to South African ratings on South African entities. And then obviously they'll issue ratings on non-South African banks and, you know, whatever, Australian banks and so forth. Similarly, if a ratings agency is based in South Africa, then I say if they do insurance, then they will also issue ratings on South African entities and instruments, but then they're completely within inside the regulatory framework because they're actually operating and doing the ratings in South Africa. The European Union creates what they call a lead analyst approach, where the rating is, where the credit rating agency is deemed to be operate and provide credit rating services if the lead analyst is in the jurisdiction. And the implication of that is that the lead analyst might not always be in the European Union, and that's why they have an endorsement regime. Similarly, it's perfectly possible that a credit rating agency can do credit ratings on South African entities and not even set foot in the country, and not be subject to any South African law. And that's really where the thinking about the endorsement regime comes about. And we do take the point that potentially the endorsement regime that we have created is extremely wide-ranging, and it actually applies to both the dark red boxes and the light red boxes. That is to say that endorsement must be on both the ratings of South African banks and the instruments. So those are the ratings that the credit rating agency gives on South African instruments, and also if a regulated person wants to use a rating issued on any other bond, say, for example, something listed in London. And we do take the point that that might be too wide. What we would like to see is that if a rating is performed on a South African instrument, so on a share, for example, listed, or not a share, because that won't qualify, sorry, for a bond issued, say, for example, by Eskom, then we want to ensure that the rating that is done on that bond issued by Eskom is done by a rating agency that falls within our regulatory framework. So we want to ensure that South African instruments are regulated by South African credit rating agencies or are endorsed by South African credit rating agencies. So what I'm trying to say is now it's still possible for a rating on Eskom to be undertaken by an analyst in London. We don't mind that. That's fine. But what needs to take place is that the rating office in Johannesburg has to endorse that rating and say that Moody's South Africa supports or stands behind or is responsible for the rating issued by Moody's in London on South African instruments. I'm sure we'll have some comments on this. I hope I've tried to explain it properly. And so we've done two things to achieve this, two small changes to the bill. This is the original definition of external credit rating agency, which we don't change. So that is basically Moody's in London or Standard & Poor's in London or in Australia. And that means a person that is registered by a regulatory authority to perform credit rating services similar to those regulated under this Act and is subject to the laws of a country other than the Republic, so somebody outside the Republic, which is basically similar to the system that we have in South Africa. And for all intents and purposes, that means that if it passes the EU rules, it will pass the South African rules. And then into Section 3.2, which is the section that determines who's allowed to operate in South Africa, we do now allow external credit rating agencies to operate in South Africa. So we do allow them to come and do credit rating services in South Africa, provided that they're approved by the registrar and that they're an external credit rating agency. So that creates the opportunity for Moody's to actually bring their analysts into South Africa from London and then to do credit rating services in London, which is one of the other comments about the endorsement regime. And then to add to that, sorry, I'm going to jump ahead a little bit. Let me go to the next one. Plus, we also allow for outsourcing. Very interesting that no one commented on the outsourcing provisions, basically because I think everybody likes them, but they didn't point out to the committee that the outsourcing provision exists, which means that they can even be based in South Africa and outsource some of their operations, but they must still be based in South Africa and they must take responsibility for the rating if they're based in South Africa. So we allow that. Plus, we have relatively broad exemption powers, which we also want to extend to external credit ratings agencies. So we allow for outsourcing, we allow for exemption, but we still would like to see that if it is a South African, a rating issued on a South African instrument, that the person that publishes that rating, or particularly if it's used for regulatory purposes, must be based in South Africa. And we do that by changing Section 4, where we split up Section 4 into two parts. Originally, we said that if you wanted to use a credit rating for regulatory purposes, then it had to be endorsed or issued in South Africa. What we're saying now is we're splitting it up into two parts. We're saying that if the rating relates to a South African entity or a security or financial instrument issued in South Africa, then it may only be used for regulatory purposes by a regulated person if that rating has been issued or endorsed by an agency that is registered in accordance with this Act. Essentially, what we're saying is that a rating may only be used for a South African entity if the rating agency is based or is based and registered under the South African law. If the rating is not relating to a South African entity, so this is a rating relating to almost anybody else, so a RAHUL rating relating to entities, securities, and financial instruments other than those referred to in subsection 1, then we still allow them to be used for regulatory purposes by a regulated person if the rating has been issued or endorsed by a rating agency that is registered in accordance with this Act or by an external credit ratings agency approved by the registrar. So we do still allow South African pension funds to buy instruments that are in London, provided that they are covered by the London rules about credit rating agencies. So essentially what I'm trying to say in quite a long way is that endorsement regime now is only required for ratings on South African entities, securities, or financial instruments for regulatory purposes. Ratings for non-South African entities can now be issued or endorsed by South African credit rating agencies or issued or endorsed by approved external credit rating agencies, i.e. non-South African credit rating agencies. Okay, this is a relatively complicated section. I hope I've explained it quite well. But it's important to note that we also have another G20 commitment, which is to reduce the reliance on credit ratings. So in actual fact, our legislation is in the pension funds legislation particularly is moving away from using ratings. So there are only a limited number of instances where ratings are used for regulatory purposes, and that's quite important to highlight. I think that the impression that may have come out from the comments from the rating agencies would be that ratings are only used for regulatory purposes. In actual fact, ratings are used in very limited circumstances for regulatory purposes because we are trying to reduce the reliance. So I think some of the comments may have been slightly skewed. And then finally, a major change is on offences. We inadvertently criminalised relatively minor transgressions of the bill. We do accept that that was an inadvertent error that crept in during the final draft, and we propose this to narrow this now to Section 3.2 and Section 4. I think that covers the main issues in the bill. I don't know if it would be useful for us to go through the detailed response matrix. It is quite long. But we've tried to deal with every individual comment there and explain what we've tried to do, and we welcome to take questions on that. And then we're also available, if you would like to see it, the comments and responses on the preliminary draft of the bill, and then the opinion from Bauman Gilfillan on the liability provisions. So I think that brings me to the end of the presentation, Chair.
We're done.
Thank you, Roy and Mama, for the response given to all concerns raised and issues raised by various stakeholders. Members, I'm going to accord it an opportunity just to interrogate this response.
Sorry, a point of order. Can I, or perhaps it's not a point of order, but it's just a simple request. Chair, it's enormously complex what they've tabled, particularly with the proposals in terms of exemptions. Can I request that we have a short timeout to try and understand it before we ask questions? I certainly need some time.
On the point of procedure?
Yes,
thank you, Mr. Chairman. I have many, many questions, and I would like to have a sense from the chair about the process and how we are going to move in that direction so that I know whether I need to put my questions now or I may have a later opportunity. I do assume that we are going to go on a close-by-close approval of this bill, and I do assume that while we do that, the department will be here, and we will be able to ask specific questions relating to specific issues arising out of specific clauses as we do the close-by-close analysis. Can you please confirm that will be the case? Because if that's the case, I'm not going to ask specific questions now. I will do that when we go on a close-by-close process of approval.
On how we will proceed, which is a very acceptable norm so far in the committee. The presentation has been done, and there has been a request for obviously some more time to look into the exemptions. But there are members who would like to pose questions now so as they can enhance their understanding. And none of us is discouraged from posing questions in whatever form that he'll want that particular question to take. You can raise questions as guided by the paragraph, by paragraph approach. You can raise questions as guided by the presentation made by National Treasury. Members are welcome to do that, because at the end of the day, we'll have our own time as committee where we are going then to agree on to what is it that we are going to do with this bill. So members, feel free to engage, and feel free, I mean, to take your time, I mean, to go through the provision of the bill. And I think now is the time for us to ask questions to National Treasury. And I will allow, because there was a request on issues of exemptions. If members feel that they need more time to go through the exemptions, I don't think there's any problem from us doing that. At least we still have time on our side. I can allow for maybe 10 minutes for members to go through that, and after 10 minutes we proceed with question sessions, you know. But also the 10 minutes that I'm according members is a 10 minutes to say go through also other responses that have been, that has not been talked to, because there is an addendum that has been given to members. So there's nothing wrong for us to say members go through that addendum also, and then come back after 10 minutes to pose your specific questions.
Chairperson, on that point, you know, obviously for Honourable Tim Harris, exemptions is a big issue, but for me, liability, being a lawyer, is a big issue. So where do we stop? You know, I've got about 12 questions to ask after this feedback from Treasury. So I think we should start asking the questions.
Mr. Chairman, and so, Mr. Chairman. May I proceed?
No. Wait a bit, Honourable Ambrosini. I didn't give you. Maybe since there is this particular suggestion that there are other areas, I thought 10 minutes will be enough to give you also time, because there is a response that has been provided as an addendum, and that response has not been talked to. So giving you 10 minutes will then give you time to look quickly into in that response document, and after 10 minutes, we can proceed asking our questions, members. That's the ruling from the chair. Thank you.
Mr. Chairman?
Mr. Ambrosini?
Sorry, I did not hear you answering my question. My question is, when we do the clause-by-clause analysis of the bill, which we are required to do, will the department be here available to answer questions arising out of our clause-by-clause analysis? No, when we do that, we're not doing it now, when we do that, will the department be available to answer questions at that juncture?
I don't think that's the problem, but I will urge you to do it now, because this is the time to engage National Treasury now. But that doesn't stop us going forward to engage further on this, because there are areas as a committee that we don't understand. So that simply says your clause-by-clause approach is also accommodated. So the best thing that you need to do now, take advantage of the current provision and ask those questions as you say they are in your clauses. But that doesn't stop you. I mean, or maybe that doesn't stop us as a committee to come back and say, Treasury, we need further clarity on certain issues, you know. So for now, members, take your 10 minutes and quickly go through those responses that has been given by National Treasury that we're not talked to.
Sorry, Chair, I just want to correct this. The meeting for today is to actually get the responses from the public hearing that we conducted. And what is being asked by Honourable Ambrosini, yes, we can do it, but it's too early for now. Thank you, Chair.
Okay, members, take your 10 minutes just to go through the responses given, and after 10 minutes, we can then proceed with the question sessions. Thank you.